This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
We live in a world where a screen is more sensitive to touch than our skin, and we are more sensitive to sensitivities than holding our own kin. People touching screens to connect globally with another but still think twice before holding hands with a different color. The days of shaking hands and touching cheeks have been replaced by accepting friends to update the family tree. The friendly nudge is now the FB poke, and a status like is the last time you actually spoke. A person's worth used to be what he does and what he knows. Now, it depends on the company he keeps and who he knows. We're told we couldn't share via P2P because it makes the industry worse when intellectual property is just basically who declares it first. Like how people marvel at the creativity of Stan Lee when the one who captured our imaginations on paper was the late Jack Kirby. Globalization is just another word to expand one's connections because the real commodity now is first-hand information. But what if I put my hand out first? Before sharing information, without sharing information, would you reach out to me? O ang ating kamay, who do you see? We live in a world where beauty is just skin deep and we test it on animals first because it's safe to us and it's cheap. We let our eyes judge based on what it sees because we use logos to tell us how to look and how to speak. From the papyrus to the printing press, from rock art paintings to La Presse, they add three more P's to the four so they could earn more and still spend less. And now they use the four C's to foresee what we would like to wear across the four seasons. Four reasons. Consumer, cost, convenience, communication. From the skin you love to touch to love the skin you're in. But what if I get under your skin? Would you feel me? Who would I see? O ang ati kamaiye. Do you feel me? You see, there is a difference between value and values. And when you value your values like your valuables value, then your valuable values is worth nothing of value. No matter how good you look in the first tenth of a second, the words you say make the lasting impression because sound travels slower than light. And that's why some appear bright until you hear them speak. Beauty goes deep, deeper than skin. That's why we are what we eat. Change the surface and we will look different, but change what we consume and we will become different. Don't be ripples on the water that are quickly forgotten or the splash that is created in an inspired moment. Be the color that changes the ocean, and you will see. And you will see me. Blame me for wearing rose-tinted glasses with human lenses, but my eyes don't like the reality, so I'm using my human senses. So what? If I think with my heart, speak with my hands, feel with my eyes, I will get you. And if I don't get you, I will touch you. So I can suck those words right out of your heart straight onto my skin and feel it with my ears because I see you, o ang ati kamaiye, I see you. So embrace your naked skin and strip these present tenses. You will never make contact if you don't use our common senses. And if you still don't see me with all your human senses, then it's time you change your contacts and wear some human lenses.
Welcome to the eighth episode of Speak Easy. I'm your host, Elaine Foster. With me in the studio is Tina Carmelia.
Hello. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. So it's eighth episode in 2018.
Yep, that's right.
I think the Chinese would say something about luck there. Unfortunately, neither of us are Chinese. So today's episode is kind of topsy-turvy. Instead of doing a roundup at the end of last year, we've decided that we'll do the roundup at the beginning of the year. But I guess it's given us a little bit of time to self-reflect. There's been a lot of developments in spoken word in Malaysia. It's really come on leaps and bounds in terms of the number of events. I mean, open mics alone, I think I did a list and there's at least 10 of them. And that's just something that we didn't see the year before that. So to help me do this roundup, I've invited fellow spoken word artist Azam Rais. Welcome to the show, Azam.
Hi, everyone.
Azam,
Happy New Year.
Azam, I don't know if it's appropriate to say, but I love this story. The first time that I met you was at a slam.
Yes.
And I was so enamored by your Shakespearean couplets.
I think I remember that one.
Should I? So Azam does lovely rhyming couplets. And so my introduction to him these days is, Azam, Azam, you make me want to orgasm.
totally inappropriate. I did tell Aileen that the first time.
Flattering.
Yeah, she just... Yeah.
How do you feel about that?
It makes me feel very flattered that Aileen feels that way. But of course, yeah, the audience may not agree.
It's non-consensual, potentially. So besides being a spoken word artist, Azam is also the founder of Poet X, Malaysia's first ever poetry podcast aimed at promoting poetry online and archiving performances. He is also an active showrunner in the poetry scene and has collaborated with many other organizations such as the UNHCR, the High Commission of Canada, Help University, IIUM, and others in his role as director of Poet X. Azam, it's been a long time coming. I've been wanting you to come on the show because of this podcast that you have been doing. The idea of archiving spoken word poetry has been something that needed to be done for so many years. Can you explain to me a little bit your kind of motivations?
Well, I don't think that this effort is new, to be honest. I think there have been many others before me who tried to do it, to do archiving or documentation of poetry in one way or another. I think we've just done it at a more consistent and stable rate than others. There was a lack of presence of documentation, and especially online, for a lot of the poets. And in this day and age, you cannot fall behind in your online platforms.
Absolutely. I mean, especially for spoken word, it is not the only place really appropriate for a spoken word poet, right, to be seen or to promote their work.
There is
publishing, of course, but then that's...
As a spoken word artist, right? You kind of really want to perform.
You need
and
to see
the
it.
Best way to get that across is either through a video, an audio file, and online, you know?
Do you have bigger plans for the archives? I mean, you're creating a body of work, which is really important.
I think the important thing is also that the poet can also show any potential employers or any potential event organizers their body of work.
Right, so it's also a portfolio.
Yeah, it's a whole portfolio of them. If you look at our website, tehali.my/poetx, we have a compilation of different poets at different events. We even have an episode dedicated solely to one poet. We have a compilation of episodes where we have a few poets in one episode as well, one where we just focus on them. So I think that really gives them a lot of accessibility to their work. If you just whip out your phone, you can show anyone you know, the breadth of your performance.
I think it's really awesome what you've been doing.
Thank you.
Thank you for that. Poets definitely, spoken word poets definitely need to be getting their work out somehow.
Yeah, exactly.
And professionally recorded, professionally produced. So, I don't think there's anything worse, actually, than having, you know, a recorded video on a bad audio put on YouTube.
Yeah.
And that just puts people off from actually watching it.
That's also a big responsibility on Poet X side, because we kind of undertake this effort to make sure that you guys have good quality production. That's why just to record, let's say, 2-3 poets, we take 3-4 hours.
Right, yeah.
Because we really give them the time to kind of get their best work out, get their best run out, get their best performance out. Then we use that, and that takes a lot of time for us to produce. But luckily, we've got our producer, Safwan, and our designer, Hanis, on board. I think it really helps the poets.
Poet X has a spin-off live event.
Ruminate was actually earlier last year, early 2017. We had a showcase of all the best at that point of time and most active poets in the contemporary scene at the time. I'm going to disclaim that, you know, my knowledge doesn't cover all the scenes, obviously. But we tried to show to the media, especially, what we felt was the best, most active poets at the time. And what we did was we staged it in a really nice place, which was in Pampas Om Laya. I think the importance of bringing poetry out of small cafes is also that you get bigger exposure. For example, we were only able to get the event on newspapers and...
Was that because of the back of the podcasts?
It was more of, I think, a combination of the venue and the marketing effort that we did.
That it was a more prestigious venue.
Yeah, I think it takes it to get there because you want to invite big reporters, you want to invite newspaper journalists to come to your place. You have to make sure that the poets are staged and presented properly as well.
So the show is helping them raise their profile.
That and also, of course, our own profile,
right.
Poet X. Pampas was also a partner in this and it also helped them in promoting their venue. You know, it was a collaborative effort that benefited both of us.
You're absolutely right. You got to take spoken word poetry out of the small cafes into bigger venues.
That's not to say that there's anything wrong
absolutely.
With the one that's
going and, you know, arguably a bigger venue because Pampas is still a restaurant. It wasn't a theater space. It wasn't a stadium, but it's still bigger.
I think it's the fanciness of it, you know.
Right.
That's what I wanted poetry to be seen as. Something that, you know, the elite could also enjoy. Something that you could have fine dining and also enjoy at the same time. Have champagne and wine.
That's interesting. You should say the elite? Because usually poetry is seen as already an elitist thing.
Not to the elite, you know, not to the high income earners, say in KL. I would say that although it's considered as an elite art, the consumers of it are mostly still youth, you know?
Young people,
yeah,
students.
Young people. I wouldn't say that they're not elite, but we're talking about two different groups.
Maybe what you mean is, or if I can understand you correctly, corporate working people.
Yes, okay.
So the students who are just odd jobbing or doing this out of recreation or purposes or whatever. Do you sell tickets for Ruminate?
Yes.
Again, this is something like we've been speaking about all last year, how people actually pay for poetry gigs these days.
Actually, it was a bold move for us also because at that point of time, that was the highest paying gig at that time. If I'm not mistaken, Walls charged 18 ringgit.
Yeah.
Ours was 20.
But it wasn't an open mic. Yours is a curated showcase.
Yeah. So we were still quite worried about that, especially a new location. We haven't tried that before. But people came out and it was a sold-out event. It was great.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
How did you get into poetry? Why the love for it so much that you want to invest in other people?
I think personally, poetry really did help me. I wrote a poem on this. I used to stutter when I was a kid. It used to be really bad and I couldn't really express myself through language, through speaking. So I started writing. And I started off as a page writer, I suppose, a page poet. But I don't think like that was where I was meant to, you know. It was only a channel for me to express myself in. But later on, when I started to gain more confidence and more self-esteem and was able to speak, poetry was a way, a good platform for me to express myself.
Yeah, last episode we talked about bringing poetry into schools. Do you think you would have benefited?
Definitely, if PCKL, say, did one of their workshops at my school, you know.
Well, there's always room for more collaboration this year, Azam.
Definitely.
You were involved in a sexual abuse campaign, an anti-sexual abuse campaign. How did you get involved with that?
The first one we had was with Monsters Amongst Us. They're an organisation under ALSA Malaysia. What they did was actually they were the ones who reached out to Poet X, saying that they wanted to do a social cause and they wanted to have a slot of poetry in it. And I think this is what really kind of encourages me, inspires me to do things, because these are students who care about changing the world more than we adults do. And they're coming up to me and they're like, you know, let's do this.
Yeah.
Let's use your networking and your resources and stuff. And it was a joint collaborative effort, but I feel like, you know, it couldn't have been done without them. I think everyone's been harassed.
Sure.
Yeah, or abused to an extent. I think sexual abuse is something that really has no place in today's world. And if we can use any form of art, any form of platform to get the message out, we should.
What other projects have you been involved in 2017 at least?
Right, a lot of social campaigns with MAU, which was an anti-pedophilia and anti-sexual abuse against children campaign. And then we had another one with Sunway University, which was the Can't Touch This campaign. This was another sexual harassment campaign.
Right.
So it's really great that students are kind of picking this up. Again, this was an initiative that was started by the students. They were the ones who approached Poet X to do this.
I just wanted to go back to the poem that we just listened to, Jamal Razlan's poem, Human Lenses, which was recorded at a live event, Ruminate's event, in February of last year.
Yeah.
Considering that this is like a roundup and an editor's pick, so to speak, why did you choose this poem to...
Okay, I think this is one of Jamal's like famous poems. Not only am I a fan of Avatar, and he uses an imagery of like, I see you,
right.
And he refers to Avatar in the poem, but it also kind of reminds you as a human to connect with each other in a human way. Because essentially what the poem is about is, I hope I'm not getting this wrong, Jamal, but it's about connecting with people through being actual human beings, through looking through your human lenses to see others in a different perspective.
Coming up after the break, I'll be introducing another poet, someone pretty new to the scene, and he's going to explain his poetry journey. You've been listening to Speakeasy on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
So my name is Dinesha, and this piece is actually a bit different because it's performed on the floor. And it's called Birth What? Sayang, the day you were born, my life changed forever. And you also changed the life of so many people here. Just look at them, staring at you, watching you. They don't realize it, but the day you were born, you changed all of their lives.
Welcome back to Speakeasy. I'm Elaine Foster. In the studio with me today is my producer, Tina Carmelia, Azam Rais, and joining us is is Julian Matthews.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You are most welcome. You've been a journalist and writer for 20 years before going into training for 12 years. And now you are a freelancer and finding new ways to express yourself apart from rants on Facebook. Before you found poetry, or rather, poetry found you.
Yeah.
Welcome to the 2017 roundup in 2018. Happy New Year.
Thank you.
When I wrote to you and asked you if you would do this, you went to a lot of shows last year, didn't you, Julian?
Yes, I went to a lot of shows last year.
And you replied, yes, I should do a review of my 9-month journey from zero poetry to poetry khaki. Let's do that now. I think you're the perfect person to kind of give an outsider's view of how you got into poetry in just 9 months.
So I think I should start with a disclaimer. I'm not into poetry. I was never into poetry as a child or a teenager or an adult. So I got into poetry quite by accident because I just strung some words and posted it on Facebook in March because I felt so bad for the victims of MH370.
Right.
It'd been 3 years. And I thought, what would it like to be to live through those 1,096 days from March 8, 2014 to March 8, 2017? And what it would live through 1,096 nights. So that was the title of the poem. And I posted that, and someone suggested I do a reading at Sharon Baca's readings at Seksan, and it apparently affected some people. So,
in a good way, I hope.
Yeah, so I thought if people are really interested in my words, perhaps I should take this a little bit more seriously. And coming back from a background where I was trained to do things, I thought I'll attend some workshops.
Get some professional technical
help.
Training. Yeah. Help. Yeah.
The first workshop I attended was by Kat Brogan, who is an Irish poet based in Malaysia. I thought if she's Irish, they might be serving some Guinness. They didn't. But she served some great shepherd's pie and stew that went with the workshop.
Just goes to show how friendly poets are. Yeah, you know, they make food. So it was your first poetry workshop. What did you expect?
I was very cynical, to be truthful. I didn't expect to get much out of it. But strangely enough, the people there were so welcoming and open and kind. And then we had the performance a month later, and people were actually receptive to the poems I'd written.
I mean, you were a journalist, are a journalist, so you're no stranger to writing.
Mm-hmm.
You did say that you weren't into poetry, and I'm imagining that's because it wasn't taught in school or you just didn't have an inspiring access into it.
Mm-hmm.
But this poem inspired you. So what was the process like learning how to write poetry as opposed to writing
I think
news?
With journalism, you're always dealing with facts.
Yep.
Yeah. So you're trying to fix or put facts in a box, and you don't want to affect anybody's quote or change it in any way or change the story in any way that is wrong. You try to stay objective and try to be accurate.
Yeah.
With poetry, it's completely different, I notice. You can get away with a
lies.
Lot of...
It's called poetic license.
A.K.A. lies.
Sorry, a lot of?
You can get away with a lot of words that don't necessarily have to fit in a box, right? And recognizing that certain words are said in a different manner or mean different things to different people. So that moved me. I thought that was particularly interesting to try out.
The first time I actually saw you perform was at Tongue Tied Cabaret.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we were having a discussion earlier in the green room how you were so, like, shocked and surprised by the collaborations that were happening, the poet and the dancer, the drag king.
Mm.
But you yourself came on stage wearing a lion's mask and singing the lion's mask I gave to you.
Yeah.
And you opened with The Lion King. You really got into the whole atmosphere and sentiment of the show, you know?
So the mask was from a shop, and
yeah.
the kite had two lions on it, which I thought fit in with the poem, which was Others or Lion Lion. And Johanna Yusri now mentioned
yes.
to me that it was going to be a cabaret.
Yeah, with singing and dancing and masks and silliness. But the poem was great. Did you learn that at Kat Brogan's workshop to be so performative, or did that come naturally to you?
I don't think it came naturally to me at all. So the poem came
Are you sure?
Yes.
It felt really natural.
You attended a few other ones, right?
The poem came out of Sheena Baharuddin's workshop, which was organized by the Spill the Ink group, the Walls group, If Walls Could Talk. And I enjoyed it so much writing that poem. So perhaps performing it was because I felt the words. The words meant a lot to me because it was about my mom and my dad and the racial breakdowns that we all have.
Sure.
And how a lot of people feel different or feel like they're others. In a country where we shouldn't. So that affected me a lot. Perhaps that's why.
Performance-wise, it felt natural. So are you saying that it was quite instinctual for you to get up and perform it?
I don't think I considered it instinctual. It's just that...
instinctual, you know, in an animal, being an animal like that.
I just felt that other people needed to hear the words. And okay. It meant so much to me. And I was just so grateful and humble that you offered me a stage. I didn't realize how big the stage was going to be.
I think it was an open mic, wasn't it?
Yes, but, right. You know, every other open mic you've been to is usually in a very small room with very intimate seating positions and people are quite close to you. This was
The B is particularly intimidating, but I think that's also what I like about it. It kind of pushes people to be performative. You've got so much space to fill. Sometimes the words aren't enough. So after this, the workshop, you went on to do loads of open mics. Then you approached me to help you with your My Malaysia writing prompt. And then out of that, because you had such huge amount of response, you decided to create an event called My Malaysia. Tell me a little bit about that, because that's connected to the poem that we just heard by Danisha.
So I learned so much from all the other events I attended. And I was so grateful to have a community welcoming me with such open arms. I was thinking, how can I give back to the community? On a whim, I decided just to start a prompt based on a book called My South. And I thought it'll just localize it and say My Malaysia in the weeks leading up to the independence and our Malaysia Day, which was September 16th. I was so surprised that everybody was actually contributing to it. So we had a prompt every day for 8 weeks. And in those 8 weeks, we had 190 poems from 35 poets, which was, for me, such a big deal that I thought, now I have to create an event for them to attend. Right? Then I asked everybody. I asked you. I asked all the people we know who organize all these events for help and advice. And they gave me great help and great advice. And people
yet again,
forward.
The supportive poetry community wins the day.
Yeah, that was good.
But the My Malaysia, and obviously connected to Merdeka and Malaysia Day, what it means to be Malaysian is obviously a subject very close to home. So it offered a nice big space at Carcosa.
Yeah, and we were so lucky to be offered that space by Asian Heritage Museum.
Yeah.
They just had a couple of slots open on the weekend. They'd extended the Jalan Merdeka exhibition, and we just asked them whether we could use the space. And the space was actually the signing room where the Sultan signed the Declaration of Independence.
So that's symbolic.
Amazing. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. In terms of the piece that you've chosen for your pick for 2017, so it's Danisha's piece called My Malaysia. Can you talk to me a little bit why you chose that?
Danisha Kartikesu is perhaps one of the most talented spoken word poets who's emerged on the scene.
Just last year, right?
And he won the Cultural Exchange Poetry Slam.
The Czech Slam, yep.
Yeah.
With Singapore.
Yeah, and he's always the person I look forward to seeing in every open mic, and I hope that he's there because he's just brilliant, right?
What do you think is brilliant about what he does?
I think what's brilliant about it is he's telling a story. And you want to listen from the first line onwards. And sometimes he uses his body.
He's very performative.
Yes. And his words are always, it gets right into your heart. And it makes sense what he's saying.
In fact, the video, which we can't see, we've only heard the audio, is of this kind of mime of him tossing roti canai. He tosses it and you don't really understand what he's doing. And then he kind of folds it up and it becomes a baby in his arms.
Yeah.
It's quite profound.
Yeah. I think what I like about Danisha is the fact that, you know, some people say that, you really need to have really powerful words, or your words need to rhyme, or your words need to have a message. But I think his attraction is the fact that he combines a lot of them. I'm not going to say that Danisha's writing is not nice, but I'm just saying that as a whole, when you look at it, you can't help but be stunned and be attracted to the performance because
the
he's using
package.
So much. Yeah, the whole package is just... The aura of his performance is really good as
I've also spoken to a lot of other poets, and we've talked about this idea of the authenticity and how the authenticity of a poet, when that comes out, is like that magic that happens.
I agree.
The personal... I mean, all poems are personal, but people like Danisha, they're really real, really personal. You know?
And he taps into his Indian cultural identity.
Yeah.
And it shows a lot in his work as well. We're actually pairing up with Poet X later on to do an anti-bullying mental health campaign kind
Great.
Of thing.
Azam,
check it out.
And Julian, what other picks of 2017 do you want to mention or are worthy of mention?
I really like the immersive project done by Theatre 60.
Malaysia
Throws Herself a Birthday Party. Mm. It's directed by Christopher Ling.
I didn't get to see that. Yes, Christopher Ling. You saw it. What was it like?
It was a completely strange experience for me because you're used to having a person behind a microphone and you're the audience. This time, you're an audience walking around and people are performing and then you don't know who's performing at what time. And sometimes they're overlapping.
It's so typical of Chris Ling and Theatre 360. I mean, immersive theater is their genre, isn't it? And that collaboration worked really well with the spoken word poets. I mean, their monologues. Like, you know, like Five Arts did the 5-minute monologues. It's a similar idea, right? But in poetic form.
Yeah.
Azam, what about you? Another pick from you, another choice.
I'd like to say The Workshops by Walls.
Yes.
Because I think there's a lot of opportunities for us to perform nowadays. You know, there's a lot more open mic shows, a lot more stages open to poetry. But I think an opportunity for you to start to develop your own craft. I mean, as poets, no matter how good we get, we need to remember that there's still a lot for us to learn in our craft.
That's a good lead into the next part of the discussion. Mm. I actually asked you, Azam, to kind of investigate what the scene was interested in terms of their wishes for this year.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is about development, marketing in terms of the savviness of how the events were run, getting their work out there with publishing. Mm. Workshops are one thing. How else people like Julian... Mm-hmm. Can a poet develop themselves, get better?
You can't just be a poet. You can't just be, you know, one thing. When I started doing poetry, I started doing just poetry, and it wasn't giving me as much inspiration as I'm getting now. Because as the director of Poet X, the number of poems, the number of poets that I get to listen to on a monthly basis, it's extraordinary. Just that way itself, you get inspired by looking at what other people do. You know, you get inspired by what other event organizers are, how they present their poets.
Yeah.
Because that's also a very important thing. Lighting, stage, technicality. I think people who've worked with me, they understand the importance of all these things as well.
So like the collaboration with Theatre 360, like kind of immersing yourself in the other types of art forms, other performing arts.
Exactly. That's exactly what a lot of the poets said. They said they'd like to see a lot more development in terms of cross-cultural experimentation between arts. I think Walls had Ru Peng, which was a cross-border kind of poetry performance because he does a lot of Chinese poetry, Mandarin poetry. So they brought it out to Walls and it's great to see there's a lot more transferring of these arts, you know.
Of course, events like Tongue Tied, trying to cross that, that line between theatre and poetry, like taking away the microphone, getting out of the cafe or the restaurant and putting it in a theatre space.
Yeah.
Interestingly, what Chris does, Chris Ling,
taking
it out of the theatre space and putting it into some kind of random, you know, broken down building.
More experimentation.
Absolutely.
For that. Tongue Tied did it at DPAC before, right?
Yeah, it was
that
DPAC.
That was a really good venue,
that
right?
We did it at DPAC. The first time that we performed it was actually in Malacca in St. Paul's.
I see.
So it was written and performed for that open, broken-down ruin. And it worked brilliantly there. And we wanted to try and actually get in the theatre. I can't say that it was completely successful as a theatre show, but I thought it broke boundaries. I thought it brought something different. At least showed other people what they could be doing.
That's what it's about, I think.
Absolutely.
You know?
I think it's exciting for me as a new poet to attend all these events and see so many people trying out new venues. For instance, I just went to the Jalan Dalam, a new open mic, which was in Melawati.
Yeah.
And I attended one in Subang. So I'm glad that people are going to new spaces to basically enlarge the pie and bring new audiences into poetry. Because I think that's fascinating.
I think that's definitely something noteworthy, that the amount of spaces, and not just in poetry, but theatre as well. There have been loads of black boxes popping up.
Yeah.
And because of this cross-collaboration with poetry, that's allowed the poets to come into those spaces as well.
Yeah, yeah.
It's funny, it is the space, I think, that has enlarged the space, like literally. Do you know what I mean?
People have had to invest in the space as well. Like, there's a new one in Subang Bestari called Ruang Irama, Kuta Hitam. And I think that's a really good venture because that's near Help University and there's nothing else around there, but they have the bravery and they have the network to make it happen. So check it out, like Ruang Irama.
And in fact, like adapting to the space is also the performer's skill as well. Again, Theatre 360, part of their whole like thing is the idea of site-specific, adapting.
Right.
And poets can do it too. And mm-hmm. poets have, in fact, all my life as a poet, I've had to adapt to either a corner in a cupboard or a bar, you know, and you adapt to the way the kind of audience that comes to
that
space.
Yeah, you have to feed off the energy of the audience as well.
Any wishes for the rest of the year? What do we want to see in the poetry scene in 2018?
Personally, I'd like to see more poets champion social causes. I'd like to see more poets experiment with different things. Get not just yourself on stage, but also someone else on stage.
Oh, that's a great wish.
Yeah, because... Pull a friend on stage. Not just bring a friend, but pull them on stage because...
Don't jack it. Pull it. Like, yes. Pull them on.
Yeah, kidnap them on stage if you have to. But all your friends, all these people who come to poetry events and they're just like, oh, no, I don't do poetry. I'm just coming to support a friend. No.
Lies. All lies. They're there because they want to do something. They just need someone to pull them on stage. Azam, I think that is going to be the name of the next project or event that at least you will do. Pull it.
Pull it.
Julian, how about you? Wishes and dreams and hopes for the poetry scene in 2018?
Yeah, I hope more people come to the poetry scene or come to poetry events and recognize that there are a lot of Malaysians who are into poetry and who are incredibly talented. I'm surprised that many people are not aware of this, as I was not aware.
Marketing. Azam's on it, don't worry. He's going to market it for all of us, as is BFM.
Thank you, BFM.
Thank you, Tina. That is all we have time for, guys. That was really enlightening. Thank you for that roundup, which was not even scratching the surface of what happened in 2017. Thank you for your choices and offering your opinions.
Thank you.
And sharing your stories. Any upcoming shows?
Yeah, actually, PoetX is involved with IM Productions. This is with Dinesha and Ian Abel as well. What we're doing is we're doing a mental health exhibit. There is actually a human exhibit. So imagine like a fine arts gallery, but instead of looking at paintings, you're looking at humans.
Oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah, and it's also site-specific. So there are going to be like 10 performances by 7-8 different organizations. It's going to be quite big. So it's going to be separated. There are going to be some shows in toilets. Some shows are going to be under the stairwell. It's going to be different things. You know, if you like immersive theatre and stuff, check this out. The Human Exhibit, Mental Health. January 25th at 2022.
Thank you to my guests today, Azam Rais and Julian Matthews. Today, we were discussing the highlights of 2017. Coming up after this, we will be putting our poets in the hot seat with our infamous monthly poetry writing prompt. Tina, I think this is your favorite part of the show, and you get to choose the prompt. You've been listening to Speak Easy on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Maybe the face I can't forget, the trace of pleasure or regret. Maybe my treasure or the price I have to pay. She may be the song the summer sings, maybe the chill the autumn brings. Maybe 100 different things within the measure of a day. She smiles across her green face. There is no envy. She shrieks a shaking storm. There is no malice. She extends bark-skinned fingers to tickle a laughing sky. She cradles ungrateful creatures in her grassy palms, though they make her cry. She sings her old songs with mud-encrusted lips, music to stroke humanity's ears. But they, arrogant and insular, but they, imagining independence without her gifts, are listening to the voices of spluttering cars. They hear blips and beeps, computer-generated sounds, the breaking glass of buildings coming down, diggers digging up her flesh to put more tar on the ground while they snap off her fingers one by one, while they release their poisons upon her fragrant breath, while they puncture her skin to suck blood from her veins, to fuel more machines, to make more buildings, to build more cities, to house more people, to birth more armies, to kill more children, to continue the war we wage upon ourselves. More money, more power, more money, more power, more respect, more respect.
Welcome back to Speakeasy. I'm Elaine Foster. With me in the studio, as usual, is Tina Carmelia. Today, I have been speaking to poets Azam Rais and Julian Matthews. And we've been kind of assessing and going over the highlights for the poetry scene in 2017. But that was easy. Now we're moving on to tougher stuff, which is the writing prompt. Tina, dun dun dun.
A lot of us put sentimental value into songs. Use your favorite lyrics as a prompt for today's poem. Put your own perspective on them.
Nicely read, Tina. I do enjoy your voice when you're on Health and Living. Yes. So we gave the poets 15 minutes. That's all. I was very strict with the prompt. Who would like to go first? This is not a slam. We will not be judging you. Okay. Actually, I'm lying. Tina's going to judge you.
Oh, my God. Okay, I guess I'll go first.
Yeah.
It's from a song by Flume featuring Kai. It's called Never Be Like You. Never be like you were the words I said to you. Never meant to break your heart in two, but we were never meant to be just two. See, I wanted to be just like you. A perfect guy for a perfect girl. And a perfect start to a perfect world. But alas, not all was as it seems. We were stitching things together when it was tearing at its seams. And we say we want each other, but we're saying two different things. And I don't mean to be so mean. Don't mean to ponder on what could have been. This could have been us and the things we could have seen. But I guess right now, you and I are just two different things.
See, what did I tell you about Azam's Shakespearean rhyming couplets? There's another word that I call golden couplets or magic couplets or something. Anyway,
I just hit the orgasm. That threw me off already. So
well, that was very heartfelt.
Thank you,
Atina. Your score.
Score.
Just
please.
Show me. Write it down on a piece of paper and lift it up. What? A 0 point? No, just kidding. An 8.9 from Tina.
Woo-hoo!
She's showing everybody
Thank
in the
you,
studio.
Tina.
Julian is shaking in his boots. Julian, again, it's not a real competition. The slam isn't really real. But Tina's criticism is. So, are you ready?
Right. Do you believe in karma? Do you think that everything was designed for us to be here? Like as if our plane crashed and we were the only survivors on Lost? And yes, the others are here too, sent by Dharma. Like every episode in that maddening show and the unresolved endings, they come and go. They come and go. Like the times we meet and I never know who you are going to show up as, how would you wear your hair, or the color of it, and your chosen despair. Like the parallel lives we lead in the present, like the two lives we led where we may have met in the past. Like a pre-recording that's played out of time. Maybe we'll meet again in a future life, and you may even really hurt me, and I may even tumble for you. And that'll be our karma, chameleon.
Julian, Karma Chameleon, it worked, right? That was a song you chose, Karma Chameleon.
Woohoo!
Tina, the scores, please. 8.6!
Woohoo!
Thank you, Tina. I guess Azam wins this round, even though there wasn't a competition. Thank you again, guys, for coming on the show.
Thank you.
You see, like, everyone always worries about the prompt, but the stuff that happens in 15 minutes, it's magic. If you think you can do better, and I'm not sure if you can, because that Karma Chameleon piece, I would have scored it a 10, actually. No offense.
Damn.
But it's just my opinion. You know, it's just an opinion, guys. If you think you can do better, please write to us at biggerpicture@bfm.my. Tweet us at BFM Radio or like us on BFM The Bigger Picture on Facebook. And of course, you can always head over to Poetry Cafe KL and like us there as well. That is all we have time for this episode. What a way to bring in the new year. We only have, what is that saying? You start as you mean to go on. Is that the saying? Are you? Anyway, forget about that.
Good try, Elaine.
Thanks, Azam Rais. Thanks, Julian Matthews. If you miss any part of this interview, you can, of course, download the podcast on the BFM app, available for free from Google Play or the Apple App Store. I've been your host, Elaine Foster. My producer is Tina Carmelia. Original music by Boy Tasek, a.k.a. Faris Firdaus. To lead us out of the show is Leon Sapphire's Be My Woman. And the reason I chose this is because Leon Sapphire has collaborated and performed on various spoken word platforms, including If Walls Could Talk and Jacket. We'll be back next month, first Tuesday. This has been Speakeasy on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.